imagine you lock like your life savings in this digital vault, right? And it is mathematically proven to be completely unhackable.
Right, like the code has been audited by the best minds in the world and it's just flawless.
Exactly. Flawless. But then you wake up the next morning and $23 million are just, they're just gone.
Wow.
And the hackers didn't break the lock. They didn't smash the vault open. They literally just tricked the vault into willingly handing them the money.
It's chilling, honestly, because, you know, when a system does exactly what it was programmed to do, but it still gives away millions of dollars, it means the flaw wasn't in the code itself.
Yeah.
The flaw was in the very foundation of how that system actually determines what is true and what is false.
Welcome to the deep dive.
Yeah.
That exact scenario, that is where we're starting today. We are digging into a really eventful issue of the Tech & Night newsletter.
Tuesday, July 21st, 2026, to be exact.
Right. And our mission for you today is basically to extract the signal from the noise here. Because we're looking at a stack of sources covering what feels like completely disconnected industries.
You know, well, totally.
We've got multi-million dollar crypto heists, a staggering $30 billion military space budget.
Which is just insane.
It really is. Plus, a major social media app essentially tearing itself down to the studs. And this massive shift in the AAA gaming landscape.
And while those might sound like they, I don't know, belong on completely different planets, there is a very distinct unifying signal hiding in all this noise.
Yeah.
Yeah. The underlying theme across all our sources today is foundations. Specifically, we're watching the biggest players in tech and space pour billions into scaling up their foundational infrastructure.
Right.
But simultaneously, highly sophisticated attackers are finding these terrifyingly novel ways to bypass our foundational security entirely.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because that digital vault scenario I mentioned earlier, that perfectly illustrates what happens when a foundation is just totally bypassed.
Yeah, the Ostium hack.
Right. We are talking about the massive hack on the decentralized trading platform Ostium. Attackers managed to drain $23.75 million from their liquidity provider vault.
Which sent absolute shockwaves through their entire ecosystem.
Instantly, right. The platform's total value locked. Their TVL plummeted from $32.7 million down to just $9
million. Oh, man.
A 72% drop overnight.
And you know, for anyone who doesn't follow decentralized finance or DeFi on a daily basis, total value locked is essentially the metric of user trust.
Right. It's the lifeblood.
Exactly. A liquidity provider vault is basically this giant pool of user funds used to facilitate trades on the platform. Mm. So a 72% drop, I mean, that is the crypto equivalent of a bank run.
Yeah. Panic just sets in.
Totally. When users see a breach of that magnitude, they rapidly withdraw whatever is left because they just have a complete loss of confidence.
But the newsletter makes it super clear that the dollar amount isn't even the most significant part of this story.
Yeah.
It's the mechanics of how they actually did it.
Right, the execution.
Yeah, because in a typical attack, hackers are, you know, they're hunting for a tiny bug in the smart contract code.
The sources use this really great analogy, actually. Normally, hackers are trying to pick the lock.
Yeah.
But the Ostium attackers didn't pick the lock. They just stole the house keys.
That is the perfect way to visualize it.
Yeah.
Because they executed what's known as an off-chain Oracle attack.
Okay, break that down for us.
So, to understand the how here, you have to look at how a blockchain actually works. A smart contract on a blockchain is entirely blind to the outside world.
It lives in a vacuum.
Exactly. If you have a contract that says, you know, sell this asset when the price hits $10, the blockchain itself has no idea what the real world price of that asset actually is. It cannot check the stock market.
Right. It can't just Google it.
No, it relies on an oracle.
Yeah.
And an oracle is simply an external off-chain server that watches the real world exchanges, aggregates the price data, and then actively feeds that information back into the blockchain.
So the smart contract is just blindly following whatever this external oracle tells it to do. Yes. And the attackers realize something crucial here. Like, why spend months trying to find a microscopic flaw in heavily audited, unchangeable smart contract code?
When you can just compromise the normal, everyday server feeding it the data.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
The hackers gained access to Ostium's Oracle and just started sending falsified price reports.
But wait, how has the blockchain not realized the data is fake? Like, doesn't it verify who is sending the information?
It does, but because the attackers compromised the actual server, those fake price reports were signed with the valid authorized cryptographic keys.
Oh,
Yeah. As far as the smart contract was concerned, this was absolute truth coming from the boss. So the attackers artificially manipulated the prices to make it look like their trades were wildly profitable.
And the vault just handed them the $23 million.
Just handed it over.
That is wild. The code executed perfectly, but the foundation of trust was just completely hijacked.
Precisely.
And that mechanism, and hacking trust rather than hacking infrastructure, that connects perfectly to another massive security failure in our sources today.
Right, the fake dick campaign.
Yeah, and this one targets human trust directly.
This is a highly sophisticated social engineering threat, and it's aimed squarely at developers. Cybersecurity researchers have actually identified nearly 7,600 malicious GitHub repositories.
7,600.
Yeah, and they're all distributing something called Smart Loader malware.
And what's really insidious here is the bait they are using. Over 800 of these fake repositories are masquerading as AI skills or model context protocol servers like MCPs.
Oh, that is so clever.
It is. Because if you are a developer listening right now, you know these are exactly the kinds of cutting-edge AI tools everyone is desperately hunting for right now to speed up their workflows.
Yeah, it's the hot new thing. And when a developer falls for the bait, clones one of these fake repositories, and downloads a ZIP file from the releases section, the Smart Loader malware activates.
And then it's game over.
Basically. That installer quietly drops an information stealer called SteelC onto their machine, and it goes straight for the throat. It siphons passwords, browser cookies, session tokens, and of course, cryptocurrency wallets.
Okay, hold on. I'm not buying this.
What do you mean?
Well, if I'm a seasoned developer, I don't just blindly download code from a random repository. I'm checking the trust signals.
Right.
I'm looking at how many stars the project has. I'm checking to see if it's been forked by other developers. I'm looking at the commit history to see if it's been actively maintained for months. And I'm reading the readm file.
Sure.
So how are experienced software engineers actually falling for this?
Because the attackers aren't just faking the code, they are fabricating the entire ecosystem of trust.
Wait, really?
Yeah, they use massive networks of bot accounts to artificially inflate the star counts and the forks, making these malicious projects look wildly popular. They even forge the commit histories. So a project uploaded yesterday looks like it has been actively maintained by this robust community for a whole year. And they generate professional, immaculate readm files.
So if the house keys in the DeFi world are stolen, and the fundamental trust signals that developers rely on every single day are just completely forged, how can anyone actually protect themselves?
What's fascinating here is that the sources do provide solutions, but they really require us to completely rethink our defense strategies.
Okay, like what?
Well, for DeFi projects like Ostium, the solution is decentralizing the data feed itself. You can never rely on a single oracle. You have to use decentralized networks like Chainlink.
Which pull data from a bunch of places.
Right, dozens of independent sources, and they demand a consensus. You also have to implement time locks and circuit breakers.
Wait, circuit breakers? Like the ones in my basement electrical panel? How does that work in crypto?
It's exactly like your electrical panel. If you plug in too many appliances, the circuit trips to prevent your house from catching fire.
Yeah, exactly.
In crypto, a circuit breaker is code that monitors the vault. If it detects a sudden massive withdrawal that deviates from normal trading volume, it instantly trips and freezes all transactions.
That makes a lot of sense.
And a time lock is similar. It forces a mandatory waiting period for large withdrawals, giving human developers time to review the transaction before the funds actually leave the vault.
So it's defense in depth.
Definitely.
You assume the outer wall will fall, so you put up inner walls.
Exactly.
But what about the developers on GitHub? How do they protect themselves against fake stars and bots?
It requires a severe elevation of vigilance. The prescribed defenses in the sources include digging way deeper than the surface metrics.
Like what?
Check the actual creation date of the repository, not just the commit history. Look at the issues and discussions. Are real humans actually debating bugs, or is it just a ghost town? Use sandboxed environments to test new code so it can't access your main system. And honestly, the hardest rule for some, never, ever download executable files from the releases tab. Only download the raw source code so you can see exactly what you are compiling.
It sounds like cybersecurity can't just be a patch you apply at the end anymore. It has to be baked right into the foundation of how you work.
Only.
Which actually transitions us perfectly to our next story. Because sometimes when you realize your foundation is fundamentally flawed, patching it with circuit breakers just isn't enough.
No, sometimes you have to rip it completely out.
Right, and that is exactly what X, formerly Twitter, just did with their Android app.
Yeah, this is undoubtedly one of the largest, boldest engineering projects we've seen since Elon Musk acquired the platform. After a full year of silent, behind-the-scenes development, they rolled out a completely rebuilt Android app from scratch.
To use a different analogy, this isn't putting a fresh coat of paint on a house. This is changing the engines on a commercial airplane while it's still flying at 30,000 feet.
It really is.
The sources highlight that the old Android app was severely bogged down by legacy architecture.
Spaghetti code, essentially. Just years and years of different engineering teams stacking features on top of a foundation that was never meant to hold them all.
Exactly. And the user experience reflected that, right? It had slow loading times, the scrolling stuttered constantly, notifications were delayed, and the app was prone to crashing.
It was a mess.
So X's engineering team made the call to start from zero. But I have to challenge the business logic here.
Okay, let's hear it.
In the social media industry, the mantra is ship fast.
Mm-hmm.
You survive by constantly releasing new features to keep users hooked. The sources note X went a full year without pushing visible new features to Android just to do this rebuild.
Right.
Is going totally silent for a year actually a viable strategy when your competitors are updating weekly?
It is a colossal risk. I mean, you risk serious user stagnation, but the payoff, at least according to the user reactions and Google Play metrics cited in the newsletter, it seems to absolutely validate the gamble. Yeah, because they stripped out all that legacy code, the rebuilt app is delivering drastically faster loading times and butter-smooth scrolling. But more importantly, for the user's actual hardware, it has vastly better battery optimization and significantly reduced memory usage.
And there is a historical shift mentioned here too, right?
Yes. And this is huge for the developer world. For the first time in the platform's history, new features for X are going to hit the Android app before they hit iOS.
That is a massive reversal.
Yeah.
iOS has always been the golden child for social app development.
It has. But if we look closer at the sources, this rebuild wasn't just about fixing a stuttering feed. It fits perfectly into X's broader corporate strategy.
The Everything app.
Exactly. They have been actively unbundling the Everything app vision into highly optimized specific components.
Right, breaking it down.
They're separating messaging into its own architecture, moving payments into a dedicated app layer. The main app is now strictly a hyperfast conduit for content and social networking.
Okay, I see.
It proves that sometimes, to handle massive future scale, you just have to absorb the short-term pain of completely rebuilding your foundation.
Speaking of massive scale, let's pivot from rebuilding digital infrastructure to expanding literal physical infrastructure. While X is scaling its app, the United States is tripling its investment in the ultimate frontier, space.
Oh, the financial numbers in this newsletter are just staggering.
They really are. The U.S. Space Force has dramatically increased the budget ceiling for its National Security Space Launch Program. Specifically the NSSL Phase 3 Lane 1 contract.
Right.
The ceiling was raised from $5.6 billion to $17 billion. And when you factor in the heavier Lane 2 launches, the total contract value comes to $30
billion. $30 billion. I mean, it's hard to even wrap your head around that much capital being injected into commercial spaceflight.
It is. And the sources outline exactly why this explosion in funding is happening right now, pointing to three very specific geopolitical and economic drivers.
Yeah, so imparting strictly what the sources lay out without taking sides here. First, the Trump administration has formally requested vastly expanded capabilities from the Space Force.
Please.
Which means requiring significantly more satellites in orbit for military communications, higher resolution reconnaissance, and early missile warning systems.
Got it.
Second, there are rapidly escalating space threats from nations like China and Russia, and the United States has made it clear they intend to maintain a dominant advantage in the space domain.
Right.
And third, the fundamental economics of launch vehicles and global satellite demand are shifting.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting for me. It's not just the government writing a single $30 billion check to one company.
Mm.
Seven different aerospace companies received these contract modifications.
Yeah, quite the lineup.
You have the established heavy lifting giants, you know, SpaceX, Blue Origin, and United Launch Alliance. But listed right alongside them are much newer startups like Rocket Lab, Firefly Aerospace, Stoke Space, and ABL Space Systems.
It's a fascinating mix of the old guard, the current champions, and the new blood.
But I'd stuck on that third point you mentioned about shifting economics.
Yeah.
Because the sources explicitly note that SpaceX has revolutionized the industry by significantly reducing the cost of going to space with reusable rockets.
They have.
So if the actual cost of putting a pound of payload into orbit is plummeting, why is the government's budget tripling? Shouldn't space be getting cheaper for the Space Force?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it really comes down to the unforgiving nature of the payload. We aren't talking about launching commercial internet satellites here.
Right.
These are classified zero-fail military missions. They require exceptionally high reliability, specialized materials, intense security protocols, and just redundant testing.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Those stringent standards are inherently incredibly expensive to maintain, regardless of whether the rocket's first stage lands itself afterward.
So you're basically paying for the guarantee that the satellite absolutely, positively gets to its exact orbit.
Precisely. But your point about the diversity of the seven companies, that is the real strategic takeaway here. By deliberately funding smaller startups like Stoke Space and Firefly alongside the dominant giants like SpaceX, the government is operating almost like a venture capital firm.
They are actively diversifying their supply base.
Exactly. They refuse to put all their eggs in one basket.
Because they can't afford to.
Yeah.
Think about the Ostium hack we just discussed. If you rely on one oracle and it gets compromised, you lose everything.
Yes.
If the Space Force relies solely on SpaceX and some unforeseen anomaly grounds the Falcon 9 fleet for 6 months,
yeah,
the United States just loses its access to space.
Right, which is unacceptable for national security.
Mm.
By funding seven different companies, the Space Force ensures they have multiple overlapping avenues to orbit. It is the physical manifestation of a defense-in-depth strategy.
They are strengthening the foundation of national security by making sure no single failure can bring the whole system down. Well, from the governmental fight for physical space, let's bring it back down to Earth and into our living rooms. Because our final story looks at the fierce competition for consumer space.
Ah, the Switch 2.
Yeah, Nintendo is doing some foundational scaling of its own, vastly expanding the hardware capabilities of the upcoming Switch 2, and the AAA gaming industry is definitely taking notice.
This represents a massive shift in how developers view handheld consoles. Historically, the original Nintendo Switch was treated as, like, a secondary platform.
Yeah, an afterthought.
Right. If a blockbuster AAA game came to the Switch at all, it was usually a heavily compromised version. But the Switch 2 is completely rewriting that narrative.
The newsletter confirms that Stellar Blade, which is this visually stunning, incredibly demanding action game from the Korean studio Shift Up, is officially coming to the Switch 2.
Which is wild on its own.
It is. And the crucial detail in the source is the rating. It retains its M for mature 17+ rating from the ESRB for blood and gore, language, suggestive themes, and violence.
So no changes?
None. It is going to be a completely uncensored, full-fat experience matching the PlayStation 5 version.
Which is a huge relief for fans who were worried Nintendo's historically family-friendly policies might force content censorship. But beneath the content rating, the technical demands of getting a game like Stellar Blade to run on a handheld device are just staggering.
Right. And the technical ambition doesn't stop with Stellar Blade. Activision announced the beta dates for Call of Duty, Modern Warfare 4.
Oh, this is big.
They have an early access beta August 21st through the 25th, followed by an open beta from August 28th to September 1st. And the absolute shocker here is that the Nintendo Switch 2 is included in that open beta, launching on the exact same day as the PC, PS5, and Xbox Series X versions.
I mean, including a Nintendo console in a synchronized multi-platform beta for a flagship Call of Duty game is a massive statement of intent.
Huge.
Activision is signaling that they are treating the Switch 2 as a first-class citizen in the AAA space.
So what does this all mean for you, the gamer? Because the newsletter doesn't sugarcoat the technical reality here. The PS5 is a massive box with a huge power supply and massive cooling fans.
Yeah.
The Switch 2 is a portable device that has to run on a battery without melting in your hands. The sources explicitly state we should expect downgrades.
Naturally.
Stellar Blade will likely run at a 1080p resolution when docked to your TV and drop down to 720p in handheld mode, and it will be hard capped at 30 frames per second. Shadow quality, reflections, the sheer number of objects on screen, it's all getting dialed back.
It has to be. The thermal constraints of a handheld just dictate those compromises.
But here's my issue with this. For a competitive Twitch reaction shooter like Call of Duty Modern Warfare 4, maintaining a buttery smooth 60 or even 120 frames per second is basically mandatory.
Right.
If you were playing at 30 frames per second on a Switch, you were going to get absolutely wrecked in crossplay by someone on a PC. So is the Switch 2 actually ready to be a primary platform for these games, or are developers just forcing a clunky compromise to make a quick buck?
Your skepticism is entirely valid regarding the competitive disadvantage in a game like Call of Duty. Playing at 30 frames means you are literally seeing the enemy milliseconds later than they see you.
Exactly.
But we have to look past the frame rates and look at what this means for the economic foundation of the gaming industry.
How so?
The fact that studios like ShiftUp and heavyweights like Activision are willing to invest the enormous engineering effort required to optimize these massive physics engines for a portable console, it means they view the Switch 2 as an undeniable market force.
Right.
The install base of Nintendo players is just too gargantuan to ignore anymore.
They want access to those millions of wallets.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Even with the visual downgrades, having a unified market where a massive AAA game launches simultaneously across PlayStation, Xbox, PC, and Nintendo is a foundational shift for the industry.
It changes everything.
For players, it provides incredible flexibility, you know. The sheer value of being able to play a massive game like Stellar Blade while sitting on a train is a huge selling point. And for developers, it provides a vastly larger unified audience to sell to on day one. It strengthens the economic foundation of the entire gaming ecosystem.
Which brings us full circle for you listening right now. Think about how you interact with technology every day. Whether you are a software developer downloading tools on GitHub, an investor tracking the $30 billion space sector, a user enjoying the blazing fast new X Android app, or a gamer deciding where to play Call of Duty this fall. The underlying foundations of your digital and physical world are shifting beneath your feet.
Absolutely.
You're witnessing massive amounts of capital being deployed to build faster applications, to secure higher orbits, and to render more expansive digital worlds. But as the Ostium hack and the fake Git campaign so clearly prove, every single one of those investments is completely vulnerable if our foundational security and our systems of trust don't scale right alongside them.
And this raises an important question, building directly on the warning we discussed regarding those forged trust signals in AI developer tools.
Let's hear it.
Right now, the primary defense the tech industry is prescribing against malware campaigns like fake Git is human vigilance. We are asking human developers to spend their valuable time manually investigating repositories, checking commit histories, and scrutinizing code to spot increasingly sophisticated fakes.
Which we know is exhausting and just super prone to error.
Precisely. But remember what the hottest bait is right now. AI tools.
Right.
Developers are rushing to integrate AI into their workflows to automate their tasks and make themselves faster. So what happens in the very near future when developers stop manually checking the code themselves and start relying on those very same AI tools to vet the repositories for them?
Cool.
If the AI vetting tool is trained on internet data that already includes thousands of these highly convincing, mathematically perfect fake repositories, or if an attacker figures out how to prompt inject the AI assistant itself to automatically greenlight malicious code, can human vigilance ever actually outpace automated social engineering? Or are we rapidly building our incredibly complex, interconnected digital lives on a foundation of trust that fundamentally no longer exists?
Because if the AI tells you the foundation is solid, but the AI itself has been quietly compromised, you won't even know the vault has been emptied until the money is already gone. That is a heavy but incredibly important thought to leave on. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive. We'll see you next time.